Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this hour. Thank you for listening in. Today, we are paying tribute to the Christmas tree, as conveyed by memories told by a large variety of central Iowans. This is our way at KHOI of saying Merry Christmas to you. It looks like we may get snow tonight on Christmas Eve. There is a chance of snow, as well as on Christmas Day, although it may turn into rain. Let's hope for snow. Temperatures should not be too low. It's expected to be a high of 40 degrees on Christmas Day and around that for the rest of the week. And for the rest of the week, there seems to be a chance of either rain or snow. And then in the weekend, the sun should return. But temperatures should stay in the low 30s and possibly the 20s over the weekend. Here is Mr. Dennis Hart with a roundup of Iowa in the news last week. Take it away, Dennis.
Thanks very much. As always, it's good to be here on this Monday, especially this Monday, Christmas Eve. Here's a look back at what made news around Iowa in the past week before Christmas, starting with the world of government. The state of Iowa offered 1% across-the-board increases for each of the next 2 years to unions representing thousands of state employees in contract talks. The biggest union, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, made an initial proposal of 3% for each year. Meanwhile, Iowa lawmakers dismissed an ethics complaint against State Senator Nate Bolton last week, saying their jurisdiction does not include alleged sexual misconduct against the Des Moines Democrat that may have happened before he was elected. Democratic Senate Minority Leader Janet Peterson said, even after the complaint's dismissal, that Bolton should resign. Bolton's lawyer said that will not happen. A Des Moines lawyer filed a complaint last month that Bolton touched her inappropriately multiple times during a social outing in 2015. Also last week, a judge threw out a lawsuit filed by a Democratic challenger in an Iowa House race decided by just 9 votes in last month's election. The judge ruled that courts lack jurisdiction in deciding the matter of 29 disputed absentee ballots in Northeast Iowa's House District 55 race. The winner was Republican incumbent Michael Bergen. And still on the political front, former Iowa Democratic governor and former U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack downplayed speculation last week that he is considering a possible challenge to Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Joni Ernst in 2020. Vilsack said his focus is on making sure Democrats will have the kind of debate that will help the party have a viable candidate in 2020 for president. There was also word last week that the number of Iowans signing up for private health insurance under Obamacare slipped this fall, but not as much as the program supporters had feared. Federal officials reported that slightly more than 49,000 Iowans enrolled in private insurance plans for 2019 by the December 15th deadline. That was down about 7% from this year's total of a bit more than 53,000. And there was word last week that Iowa is now tied with Hawaii for having the lowest jobless rate in the nation. In both states, the unemployment rate is 2.4%. Meanwhile, there was word last week about a lawsuit that alleges that hundreds of Central Iowa urology patients, including some who had just undergone cancer surgery, have been prevented from seeing their chosen doctors since those doctors were fired by the Iowa Clinic in September. The Iowa Clinic provides the bulk of urology services in the Des Moines area. The lawsuit alleges that the Iowa Clinic invoked a non-compete clause in the doctors' contracts to keep them from practicing in the Des Moines area. Much of last week's news had to do with education. The Iowa Department of Education identified 34 schools that need comprehensive improvement for all students and 307 that require targeted support for some student groups. That's because students as a whole or with certain populations are not meeting state benchmarks for learning and growth. In Waukee, the chief operating officer in the Waukee Community School District resigned last Monday after being charged with 3 felonies related to his work with the district. Shortly afterward, it was revealed that Eric Rose faced a 4th charge. Rose had been placed on paid administrative leave early this month after a state audit revealed that Waukee school administrators improperly used district charge cards, spent large amounts of money on out-of-state retreats, and violated district policies without consequences. Still on the education front, middle school students from the Clarksville and North Butler school districts will learn how to safely handle a gun during a physical education course focusing on hunter safety. The superintendent for both districts, Joel Foster, said he hoped the course will also prepare students to react in the event of an active shooter situation. During the course, the students will use inoperable guns with replica ammunition. Parents will be able to opt to have their children sit out the course. Meanwhile, the Des Moines Register reported that Iowa's surging economy is bringing hard times to many of the state's private colleges and universities. As the state's jobless rate continues to fall, the state's private liberal arts colleges are taking a hit, with enrollment falling and revenue margins shrinking. As one university president put it, when the economy is putting people to work, there's less incentive for people to go to college. On the crime beat last week, word that DNA evidence had led police to charge an Iowa man with the 1979 murder of an 18-year-old woman in Cedar Rapids. Police arrested 64-year-old Jerry Lynn Burns of Manchester for the decades-old stabbing death of 18-year-old Marie Martinko. Police found her in December 1979 in her family's car at a mall parking lot in Cedar Rapids. She had driven to the mall after a school choir banquet to shop for a new winter coat. Burns made his first court appearance Thursday, where a judge set his bond at $5 million cash. Also last week, word that before investigators arrested a farmhand in the death of University of Iowa student Molly Tibbetts last summer, they had looked at four other men. Those men faced police interviews, searches of their vehicles and property, and investigations into their cell phone data before authorities determined they had nothing to do with Tibbetts' disappearance. 24-year-old Christian Bahena Rivera was arrested and charged with Tibbetts' killing. Still on the crime beat, the adoptive father of an Iowa teenage girl who died of starvation pleaded guilty to four felony counts in connection with her death late last week. 43-year-old Mark Ray pleaded guilty in connection with the death of 16-year-old Sabrina Ray in Perry. He will be sentenced next month. There was more last week, including word of the death of an Iowa inmate serving a life sentence for molesting and murdering an 11-year-old Des Moines girl in 1991, years after he killed a New York girl. 61-year-old Charles Edward Lesage died at the University of Iowa Hospital, where he was taken because of a long-term condition. He had been convicted of first-degree murder in the killing of Rosalind Barnes, who was molested, beaten, and strangled. His incarceration began in 1993. Also last week, the Iowa Board of Parole denied parole for a man who has a record of abusing women. That means 38-year-old Scotty Wayne Parks will serve the remainder of his prison sentence with a tentative discharge date next July. Parks has been denied parole at least a half dozen times. He went to prison in 2013 after biting the face of his sixth victim. And an Iowa man who was set to plead guilty in a sexual abuse case was released from jail last week after the Clark County attorney, who herself had been arrested for public intoxication, missed the deadline to prosecute him. A district court judge ruled that charges against 23-year-old Dennis Michael Zimmerman of Murray should be dropped. Clark County attorney Michelle Rivera was arrested October 18th, the day of the hearing where Zimmerman was set to plead guilty. Rivera lost her re-election bid last month. And there was word last week that customers of Brugger's Bagels have been advised to check their credit card payment information after the discovery of a data breach. Anyone visiting any company-owned Brugger's locations between August 28th and December 3rd might have had their credit card information accessed illegally. Also last week, Indianola asked an Iowa court to set aside a Warren County Board of Adjustment ruling and allow the city to build a wastewater treatment facility on 18 acres northwest of the city limits. Last month, the county zoning board had denied a special use permit for Indianola to build a nearly $35 million facility. The city wants to replace an existing water treatment plant because officials say it's out of date and not able to handle the growing community's needs. There was also word last week that the Iowa Civil Rights Commission was taking legal action to enforce a $14,700 judgment against a business owner accused of using racial slurs to belittle black employees. Bruce Smith of West Des Moines and his company, AAA Allied Building Services, have been ordered to pay lost wages and damages to an employee who said he quit after enduring the racial harassment. Meanwhile, in Denison, three of the highest-ranking city employees were placed on paid administrative leave last week for reasons city officials declined to make public. The three were the city manager, the city clerk, and the fire chief. The city council voted last Friday to hire a Des Moines law firm for an investigation related to the three city employees. Also last week, a report that Des Moines will start to shut down unlicensed massage therapy businesses, joining a host of other Iowa cities that have also passed regulatory ordinances. The capital city's ordinance is relatively simple. Either have a state massage therapy license or cease operation. Therapists will be required to hold an Iowa massage therapy license to serve clients in Des Moines. Meanwhile, last week, the Des Moines City Council approved a new approach to handling so-called community cats, ownerless felines that live outdoors. Animal control officers will capture the animals, spay or neuter them, and return the animals to neighborhoods. Supporters of the so-called trap, neuter, and return ordinance said it will help manage cat populations more humanely. The Animal Rescue League of Iowa will start rounding up the feral cats in a couple of months. Then a veterinarian will check each animal to make sure it's healthy enough to be returned. There was also a report last week that a greater share of households in Des Moines earn at least $100,000 each year than in most other American cities. The Des Moines-West Des Moines metro area ranked 17th in the study of U.S. metropolitan areas for the percentage of tax returns reporting six-figure incomes. The study shows nearly one out of five metro tax returns reported income of $100,000 or more. And that is your summary of news from around Iowa during this past week before Christmas. I'm Dennis Hart. I'll be right back here on Friday with news from around Ames. Before I go on this Christmas Eve, I want to take this opportunity to sincerely wish each and every one of you the very merriest of Christmases and the happiest of holidays. And I hope you have a great holiday week.
Oh, Tannenbaum, oh, Tannenbaum, wie treu sind deine Blätter. Oh, Tannenbaum, oh, Tannenbaum, wie treu sind deine Blätter. Du grünst nicht nur zur Sommerzeit, nein, auch im Winter, wenn es schneit. O Tannenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Dennis Hart, for a roundup of Iowa news. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I am your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg, as we head into Christmas. So we're going to spend an hour just sharing some Christmas stories with you. So in particular, we're going to talk about Christmas trees. I'm not sure how we got onto the topic, but our reporters have been going out and getting just some stories. So enjoy.
Tannenbaum, O Tannenbaum, du kannst mir sehr gefallen.
I was in the Kiwanis Club here, and we sold Christmas trees on a lot up here in Story City. And we had a heated camper, and we had all the Christmas lights around the periphery. And one day, it was like the page out of It's a Wonderful Life. These huge snowflakes were falling. It was just after dusk, and so the only lighting was the Christmas tree lights. And here comes this young couple, and they were holding hands, and obviously newly married, actually. I'd been talking to them. I found that out. And they walked around the lot, and, price was an issue. And then they told me it was their first Christmas of their marriage. And I was so moved by the whole environment, the heavy snow and the Christmas lights, I gave them the tree. I just gave it to them. And I'll never forget that. That was kind of special.
We like Fraser firs that Mahler needles usually. That was something we always cut down with our parents. It's been a tradition in my family when I was growing up, and his too. So it's something we enjoy to do for the holidays together because we don't have children yet. So we liked that it was kind of off the beaten path, being out in the wilderness. We enjoy doing that. We actually live in Boone. We like a rural atmosphere, and we like being kind of in the wilderness a little bit more, so we decided to move to Boone. I've got some ornaments that I've had since I was a child, and then my mother actually buys an ornament every year for our dogs, because they're our babies, and so a dog that I had several years ago that I had to put down that was my baby, I have his picture still on there. And so each year we do that. And then we also have a few sentimental ornaments, like from when we were married and things like that. So we kind of pull those out and get excited and do those every year.
One of the most memorable Christmases that I ever experienced was when I was about 13 years old. Without much warning, my mom and I moved to Canyon City, Colorado, which was kind of a glamorous location. It has the Royal Gorge. It's a resort town. And we bought a motel. Well, she bought a motel. And my dad continued to work at his regular job in Hastings, Nebraska. So he did come to Colorado for Christmas. And the three of us went out from the motel, drove out into the National Forest with a little handsaw. And we looked around the National Forest, and I'm thinking this was completely legal, but anyway, it was open space. There was nobody worried about it. And we looked around and found a little tree about 3 feet tall, and I was like 13 years old, and I got to be the major decision maker in picking out the tree and then help saw it down. So we found it and cut it, and it was just back to nature. You know, so much of life now is all fabricated and organized, and this was more like the Wild West. We cut a tree out of the ground and took it home and decorated it, and that was a very joyous, memorable experience. A little sidelight, I had lost my little billfold, and I was only 13, so I didn't have a lot of valuables like credit cards, but my folks seemed to have found it somehow, and it showed up under the tree on Christmas Eve. That was a little, like, frosting on the cake to get my billfold back. But as long as I'm mentioning Christmas trees, we now have a fiber optics Christmas tree. It's there right now in our house, and it requires no decorations. It's so sweet. The little color wheel underneath is hidden, but it makes the needles, like, come to life in color, and the colors are constantly changing, and I do love that. But the memory of that little kind of a scrawny tree, but it was charming and it was natural. It smelled great. The tree we have in our living room now doesn't have any smell. So I'm Roger Berger. Merry Christmas, Happy Yule, and above all, where it all came from in the first place, we got through the winter solstice. So happy post-winter solstice.
Christmas memories. Paul Nelson here, and I came up here to Ames in 1971 from Arkansas. Spent my childhood in Fort Smith, Arkansas, and one Christmas I remember because of something that happened involving a couple of animals. I was about 10 years old, and Christmas morning came, and I was very excited because, among other things, I had a brand new bicycle under the Christmas tree. So I came down the hall, entered the living room, and my parents were there. We gathered around and started opening presents and so forth. And I looked over and noticed that our Siamese cat had all of a sudden grown a huge tail and was looking very intently at the Christmas tree. And looked over at the Christmas tree, and I could see a little bit of movement back there. The cat kind of slunk around to the side, tail growing bigger, if that's possible. The Siamese cat is relatively short-haired, but this tail was as big around as a raccoon's tail at this point. And I saw a little bit of movement back there, and all of a sudden, a huge black snake emerged from the back of the Christmas tree and started gliding across the floor toward the hall. Its head was held high, about 6 inches off the floor, looked like a cobra, and that cat followed that snake out into the hall, and we heard a scuffle. We did manage to corral the snake and put it outside, but the cat walked around the house the rest of that day with a huge tail, looking in every corner, trying to figure out what in the world had just happened. We never could figure out where that snake got in the house. But black snakes are non-venomous, and they're not uncommon in that part of Arkansas. Oh, the bike was very nice, by the way. It was a nice new Schwinn. So how's that for a Christmas? Yep. Surprising. Surprising. A Christmas surprise. I grew up a Catholic, but I'm fond of saying that I gave the church up for Lent 1 year and never went back. For the entire central Iowa, for the KHOI listening audience, have a very, very happy solstice season.
Growing up in our house here in Ames, we used to hang our tree upside down from the skylight. Yeah. Up until I was about 8, we did that. It was, I don't know, funny. It was decorated, just ribbons and ornaments we collected throughout the years, hanging upside down. It's a tradition. We always look forward to it. Hanging the tree upside down from the skylight.
When my husband was deployed to Iraq, I decided to have a very patriotic Christmas, so I put up a red, white, and blue Christmas tree. I bought red, white, and blue Christmas bulbs, and I bought a red garland, and I think I had white garlands, the fluffy white garlands, you know, that are crinkly and make sound. So I had this spectacular, and I think I even lit it up. So I had lights on it, too. It was a beautiful, very patriotic, you know, go America tree. But we had three brother cats that were hunters. They were apex predators. So it was like we're setting ourselves up for failure here. Anyway, the cats would climb up the tree and perch in some of the top branches. And the cats attacked it. I think they attacked it to the point where it actually knocked over. I'm laughing, but I could see from the cat's perspective that I set this up as a great big gift for them. The thing that they attacked first was everything blue. They attacked all the blue bulbs first, more than the white bulbs, more than the red bulbs. Anyway, I actually still have some of the bulbs from that event when Chris was deployed. They're flag bulbs. They're red, white, and blue, and they have little stars on them. And those survived my cats because they were at the top of the tree. After, I think it took us about 3 years, we decided not to put the tree up anymore. Currently, I think our tree is one of those tiny tabletop trees that are about a foot tall with tiny decorations. And even that one, the cats will jump on the table to get. So those who own cats have the same predicament. I have seen where people attach the tree upside down to the ceiling and they decorate it in an inverse way and the cats can't quite get it. Just be kind to them. Just love your animals, no matter what they are and what they do. In the big picture, you're sharing this world with them. Happy holidays.
You are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Today, we are paying tribute to the Christmas tree, as conveyed by memories told by a large variety of Central Iowans.
My mom lived for the last 3 years of her life at Bethany Manor, a nice nursing home in Story City. And they did many things to try and make life a little holiday joyful and festive at Christmas time for the residents. But individual rooms were only decorated if the family did it for them or if they had their own things. So Mom didn't usually have decorations in her room. But the last year that she lived, one of her grandsons, who didn't come very often, came to see her, brought his girlfriend with him. And when he arrived, he couldn't find her. He said he tried. He asked several people. He wasn't able to find Grandma. But he left on her little nightstand in her room a lovely little fiber optic Christmas tree, the kind you plug them in and the lights phase in and out. They're not expensive. You can still buy those at a big box store, but they put out the prettiest lights. He left that on her nightstand. So she came back to her room eventually to find this pretty little tree doing its thing and making her room look so festive. And when my sisters and I, who came to visit her often, we came and she would say, "Did you bring that tree?" "No, Mom. I wish I could say I had been the one, but I didn't." "Well, who brought that tree?" And we would all say, "Well, just enjoy it. Whoever brought it, that was so nice of them, and just enjoy the tree." Well, she was so focused on, she wanted to know where that tree came from. So we asked around, and eventually we learned that it had been, his name is Tamar, her son, her grandson, my nephew. So she had, indeed, a little bit of decoration in her room that last year, her last Christmas, which, you know, we didn't know at the time it was her last Christmas. And after she passed away in late March 2005, and we are each sharing some of her things, one of my older sisters said, "Would it be all right if I had Mom's tree for Christmas?" And we said, "Sure." So she took it home with her. And what happened after that was a sharing of Tamar's gift. There were four sisters who lived in this area and a brother. And we, each year, we took turns for getting to have Mom's little fiber optic Christmas tree in our home for Christmas, which was very special. We did offer it back to Tamar, but he said, "No, that's all right." Eventually, one of the years that I had it, my husband kind of concocted a nice cardboard storage box for it, so that it would stay in good condition as it moved from home to home. Eventually, it was to be enjoyed by the youngest of my sisters, the youngest in our family, and we decided that rather than have the tree suffer damage from moving from home to home, that she should keep it, and she was happy to do that. So the little tree that Tamar surprised his grandma with lives on a farm home at Ellsworth, Iowa, probably out doing its thing this Christmas season.
I was probably, I'd say about 10 or 11 years old. And my mother, who was an artist, just like myself, she was always looking for something new and exotic and something that no one else had. She was always looking through magazines and everything, and she had seen these white flocked Christmas trees. And flocking was the stuff that you put on Christmas trees that gives it a texture, like a fluffiness. So that was her idea of having a white flocked Christmas tree. Well, okay, so my dad got a long needle pine tree for our Christmas tree, and we brought it into the house, and it went to the basement first thing. And what he did was he spray painted the whole tree in white. That was a big production all in itself, you know, to get the plastic around the floor and all of that. And then the fog of white paint all around, white spray paint. That just was quite the production. And then came the flocking, which was, again, in spray cans. And so there must have been 10, 12, who knows, I forget how many. But he flocked that whole Christmas tree and was careful to turn it and twist it and turn it all the way around to make this white flocked Christmas tree. And it was one of the absolute first Christmas trees like that ever. My mother decorated it not with baubles and not with lights or anything like that. She made roses. It was decorated just with red roses. The only place that you ever saw anything like that was in Better Homes and Gardens or like today's would be Architectural Digest or something like that. It was gorgeous. I think the tree was probably 5 feet tall. It was a real tree. So it was a substantial tree. It's absolutely gorgeous, and floodlights underneath it to spotlight the Christmas tree. So that was a very, very special tree. My folks were very social, and people would visit one another, and friends would come to our houses. We'd go to theirs, so on and so forth. And Mom's tree was the only one like it in the whole neighborhood. It was very beautiful. No one had ever seen anything like it. And it was just like my mother. That's just, she would always pick up on something that was very, very exotic and bringing to life something totally unexpected. My Christmas tree, which only is about 2 feet tall, it's an artificial tree. It's white, and it has the little lights. The long fronds of the lights are interwoven with the needles. And that's my white flock tree. Makes for a great nightlight at night. I really, really like that little tree. I love it. I've always really liked it. My husband really likes it, too. Well, it's a wonderful, beautiful time of the year, and it's very important to remember who this season is all about, and that's our good Lord Jesus Christ. And wish everyone a very blessed Merry Christmas. You too, Ursula. Love you much.
I grew up in a church and a family that didn't celebrate Christmas as a religious holiday. We had family gatherings around a table loaded with food and shared stories and a strong sense of belonging and love. Sure, we had a Christmas tree with lots of presents beneath, and some of those, when I was younger, were delivered by Santa Claus. But no Christmas Eve service and no sharing of the Christmas story from the Bible. After my brother and I were old enough that Santa Claus was only a memory and my parents could get off to bed at a reasonable hour, I would stay awake until everything was quiet in the house. Then I would take my Bible with me, almost tiptoeing into the living room, plug in the lights of the Christmas tree, and sit in my dad's old recliner next to the tree. The warmth of the lights, do you know those old-fashioned kind with the larger bulbs than today's LED strands?
I love those.
Those would rouse the scent of the cedar tree that was cut from the far end of our farm. And what a delightful smell. Mm. And the multicolored lights cast red, green, blue, and yellow splotches on the page as I snuggled in the recliner, leaning close enough to the tree to see the words. Some years I read from the Gospel of Luke, the story of the birth of Jesus in the stable and the visit by those shepherds. Of course, this was from the King James Bible, that version that tells of those shepherds being sore afraid. Other years, I read Matthew's version of the Christmas story that included the journey of the wise men moving through the nighttime following the star. Then I would lean back in Dad's recliner and imagine being a shepherd or a wise man making my own journey to Bethlehem, maybe looking at the star atop the Christmas tree. I'd stay until I got drowsy, then would unplug the lights and slip off to bed in the darkness, still holding the story, the scent, and the colors until I fell asleep.
One little Christmas tree was standing alone, waiting for someone to come by. One little Christmas tree that never had grown, cried as he looked up to the sky. Oh, please, Mr. Father Tree, the tallest of all, I'm so afraid and so alone. Could one little Christmas tree, so tiny and small, light up someone's home? 'Cause one little Christmas tree can light up a home, so one little child can find a toy. One little Christmas tree can light up a home, so one little heart can find some joy. One little angel.
Oh, back in the 50s, I had a smaller living room, but I had one section, one corner that was completely enclosed, and my husband got me a Christmas tree that we had to cut the top part out because it reached to the ceiling, took up the whole quarter of the corner, and we decorated it without having enough decorations for it, so I hung my Christmas cards all on it to make up the extra. Oh, my. Looked very nice. I got a lot of compliments on it.
Okay. When it was just my kids and myself and we were, like, short on money, we would go out into the country and find one of those ditch trees at the farm. The farmers don't really care about, you know, they're usually in their fence row, but I think the kids thought we were doing something, I don't know, maybe it was illegal. And, you know, we would spot one and then we'd make a plan to go back later and cut it down when we would think there was less traffic. It was kind of exciting for the kids to do that. And then we, you know, because they're usually full of dust from all the road dust, we'd have to bring it home and wash it off and clean it up and trim it up till they weren't like the beautiful trees, you know, my parents used to buy in a very German tradition. Oh, they were all right.
There was a time when a Christmas tree was so desired that we would resort to traveling around Ames. When the fraternities and the sororities would leave town, they would always leave their tree by the dumpster. But it wasn't quite Christmas yet. And those were perfectly good. They always smelled refreshing and delightful. I mean, they'd done their part. You might even get some bonus tinsel in the bargain. It worked out really well. Going around to the fraternities and the sororities to use their tree, give it a new life. And then, if you kept that tree, by July, there'd be a hot summer evening, and you could take that tender, dry Christmas tree and turn it into a iconic firestorm of energy that would lighten the night sky, the sparks. It's really quite a big fire. And you think, next year I can't wait. I know where there's going to be a unending supply of Christmas trees for the July bonfires.
This is a story of my daughter, Wendy, and her experience of her first Christmas tree. She was only about 2 or 3 years old, I believe. Three years old is such a magic, magic time for youngsters, for little itty bitty ones. And she was just so, it was just magic for her. And I wanted to make sure that she didn't touch the Christmas tree. I told her it was okay for her to see all the baubles and all of that, but not to touch the Christmas tree. And the way I taught her was, I said, "You see these pine needles?" And she, "Yeah." And I went, I touched one of them. Touch it. Ouch. She went, and I looked, touched it again. Ouch. Oh. And I said, "This is why we don't touch the Christmas tree." And so she got the idea. She didn't come near it. She loved to watch it and look at it, but no, she stayed her distance away from it, so I didn't have to worry about pulling the Christmas tree down on herself or anything like that.
My husband and I had a blue spruce that we had planted at the back of our yard many years ago. It was becoming a nice little tree. They grow slowly, and then we decided that we had never decorated that tree. It was just back there. We love blue spruce. It was going to become this beautiful blue spruce to fill out the back of our yard, and that was our plan. But then we decided to build a new garage. Come spring, because of the garage construction, that tree was going to have to be moved, which made us sad. We didn't really have another place on our lot to put it. We had plans, and we did eventually move it to some friends' property in the country. But the fun part of this tree story occurred one Saturday evening after my daughter and I arrived back home from a long, tiring day of Christmas shopping. We had gone to Des Moines. I'm not a big-time shopper, so when I spend a day shopping, I'm here to tell you folks I'm tired and done with it. But that evening, it was dark already because that time of year, it gets so dark so early. And we drove into to the driveway, and we could just, as we drove in, my daughter said, "Oh, Mom, look. My husband and my brother-in-law, who was living with us for a time then, they had dug out the old Christmas tree lights, those old big, they're a bigger bulb, and all the primary colors, beautiful lights. And they had decorated that little blue spruce with those lights. It took a lot of power cords to get power to that little thing back there. But that was our surprise as we drove back in the driveway, was to see that little tree all decorated and lighted and looking so beautiful back there. And I will forever hold that memory, because we not only never did that again, the tree left our yard. So it was fun. It was fun.
Smokrudona, smokrudona, arlustiga atsi. Smokrudona, smokrudona, arlustiga atsi. Ej svansar, ej svansar, ej öron hava de. Ej svansar, ej öron hava de. Kuakaka, kuakaka, kuakaka. Kuakaka, kuakaka, kuakaka.
Whenever I think of Christmas trees, I think of a record that I got about 50 years ago from Swedish friends called Dancing Round the Christmas Tree. I love that music, and so I called Ingrid Andersen.
Well, I was born in Sweden, in Småland. I must have been around 5 years of age. And we were at my grandmother's, Mormor's, house in Småland, the dark forest around us. And my mother has a big family, lots of siblings, and we were dancing around the tree, and we had not electric lights, but we had candles, yes. My father was a fiddler, and it doesn't stand out in my memory, but he was always playing. And my uncle had was a guitar player, and we had one other fiddler, and that's my first memory of dancing around the tree. And we used to do it at my farmor and farfar's house. That's my father's parents' house. There was also a tradition of being in a long line running through the house as far as you could come, up to the attic and down again, and singing these Christmas songs. I have a CD that was produced, I mean, quite recently in 2000, but it sounds like they were recorded from old LPs or EPs because they sound a little old-fashioned. You can hear the stomping of feet, and that it's charming. So I have one, really nice one.
Muskrisarivi allihoppa, allihoppa, allihoppa. Muskrisarivi allihoppa, allihoppa. Och jag med, du med, och jag med, du med, och jag med.
My grandfather, Oscar Henderson, was one of the business people who put together the Christmas tree in Story City. It was in the square right in the middle of town. It was first, I think, in 1913. And in fact, the article commemorating this says that he was responsible for decorating the tree. And we have to remember that that was 1913, and not everyone in Story City had electricity. And of course, on the farms, I doubt if there's any electricity at all. And so here they put up this big 15, 20-foot Christmas tree in the town square with electric lights. Not only electric lights on the tree, but electric lights running on the guide wires that secured that tree to the buildings so it wouldn't blow over in the wind. So it was just a vast array of Christmas lights at a time when, well, electricity was sort of at a premium, so it was considered ostentatious and risky. And of course, it was the only community Christmas tree at that time for miles and miles, if anywhere. Might have been the only one in the country, really. And so I'm proud that my grandfather was part of that project. And so our family goes way back. My mother's father, Oscar Henderson, was born 11 years before the Civil War in 1850. A lot of Norwegian families bypassed the tenements of New York City, and they went to a staging area in Illinois. And then they would branch out. They would send men out to Homestead in Iowa. And so Oscar was born in Lisbon, Illinois, and then his parents were some of the founding fathers of Story City. So Oscar would be the first generation born in the United States in 1850. And he had a family of seven children with his first wife. His wife passed away, and then he married my grandmother when he was 42 and she was 17. They had nine children. And Oscar was a successful farmer. He ended up owning four or five farms up by Randall. In today's money, owning five farms around Randall, Iowa, would make him a very, very wealthy man. Of course, these sons occupied the farms that he owned. And so Oscar was really a flamboyant businessman, and he had a big, bushy mustache. He was a showman, a farmer. What a guy. What a guy. And that's very appropriate that he'd be involved in this Christmas tree project. He was one of the guys who came up with that idea. My farmhouse, in this small farmhouse south of Story City. This is the house I grew up in, with all these Christmas memories and several families in the end, with lutefisk and lefse, roast beef, and ghosts of Christmas past. And now, of course, there's a tree again this year in Story City with guy wires to the buildings, and it's a beautiful, shapely tree about 30 feet high, and you don't dare violate that tradition. So I'm honored to know that my grandfather was a leader in making that tree happen, Story City. I'm proud that my grandfather was part of that project.
Oh, Christmas tree, Christmas tree, such pleasure do you bring me. Oh, Christmas tree, oh, Christmas tree, such pleasure do you bring me.
You have been listening to a Christmas edition of Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg. I've had the pleasure of being your host for this hour as we have shared our Christmas tree special with you on the eve of Christmas. Thank you for listening in. You've heard stories from numerous people around Central Iowa, favorite memories and thoughts on the Christmas tree. My own family were post-war immigrants from Europe where people put candles on Christmas trees, so I grew up with Christmas tree full of live candles. My parents must have brought candle holders with them from Europe. My father would light them in the Christmas tree room while my mother and my sister and I would stand out in the hall and sing Christmas carols, and then we would come in and see this beautiful Christmas tree with a halo around it from the candlelight, and then my father would read us the Christmas story from the Bible. And afterwards we had presents. In our family, presents were opened on Christmas Eve, and it was all done by the glow coming from the candles. If you ever have a chance to see a Christmas tree lit by candles, take up the opportunity. It's a very beautiful sight. It's a Christmas tree that is literally in a cloud of golden light, and it's just a very beautiful sight to see. So here's to my European parents. Thanks for joining us. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. And also remember that you can hear a recording of this show later on when our webmaster is able to put the show up on the homepage of khoifm.org, where you can listen to it on demand. Also, remember that KHOI is streaming live in real time at khoifm.org. Just click on the megaphone. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you would like to try your hand at reporting, come and join us. We'll train you, and you'll have a good time learning about your local community. It's always an honor and a pleasure. Remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio. Happy holidays.
Rocking around the Christmas tree, let the Christmas spirit ring. Later we'll have some pumpkin pie and we'll do some caroling. You will get a sentimental feeling when you hear voices singing, let's be jolly, deck the halls with boughs of holly. Christmas tree, have a happy holiday. Everyone dancing merrily in the new old-fashioned way.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. You can support Ames' growth while enjoying a wide array of local shopping and dining experiences that Ames independent businesses have to offer. From the Ames Chamber of Commerce, happy holidays!